He had borrowed glasses from Sorrel, was looking at the Union lines. He could see cannon now, rolled out in front of the trees. He could see men moving among the caissons, men on horseback moving in the trees. Here and there a pennant blew. He saw a flash of gold. Breastworks were going up, twisted sticks, small, very far away. There was an open valley below him, partly cultivated, then a long, bare rise to the Union line. To the left was the high hill, Cemetery Hill, that Ewell had failed to take the day before, the hill that had worried Longstreet. To the center was a wooded ridge. To the right there were two round hills, one rocky, the other wooded. The Union position was approximately 3 miles in length, or so it seemed from here. All this Fremantle saw with continually rising excitement. He looked down, saw Longstreet rise, move off, shoulders bowed, wandering head down and lumbering like a bearded stump to stare out at the lines. Hood joined him. Once more, Longstreet shook his head. Lee came back to a small table, stared at a map, looked up, back toward the Union lines, keeping his hand on the map. Fremantle had a good look at that extraordinary face. Lee looked weary, more pale than before. The sun was climbing. It was noticeably hotter. Fremantle felt a familiar rumble in his own stomach. Oh, God, not the soldier's disease. Those damned cherries. There seemed no point in remaining in the tree. Soldiers had observed him, hanging in the air like a plump gray fruit, were beginning to point and grin. Fremantle descended with dignity, joined the other foreigners. He heard for the first time that day music, a polka. He listened with surprise. He could not identify the sound, but he knew the beat. It was followed by a march. Ross said, "They play even during an attack. Not very good, but inspiring. Have you heard the rebel yell?" Fremantle nodded. "God-awful sound. I expect they learned it from the Indians." Ross opened wide his eyes. "Never thought of that," he said. His silver helmet shifted. Sweat was all over his brow. "I say, old friend, you really aren't going to wear that thing all day, are you? In this charming climate?" "Well," Ross said. He tweaked his mustache. "One must be properly dressed. Teach these fellas respect." Fremantle nodded. "Understandable. One tried to be neat. But that helmet." And Ross did tend to look a bit ridiculous, like some sort of fat plumed duck. These chaps all look so natural, so earthy. Not the officers, but the troops. Hardly any uniform at all. Brown and yellow. Americans. Odd. So near, yet so far. He saw Moxley Sorrel walking briskly off on a mission. Corralled him, as the Americans would put it. Sorrel said, "We've sent our engineers to inspect the ground to our right. We'll be attacking later in the day. Don't know where yet, so you can relax, I should say, for 2 hours or so at least." "Have you heard from General Stuart?"
"Not a word. General Lee has sent out scouts to find him."
Sorrel chuckled.
"Cheer up. You may have your charge."
"I hope to have a good position today."
"We'll do all we can. I suggest you stay close to Longstreet. There'll be action where he is."
Sorrel moved off. Through the trees, Fremantle saw Longstreet mounting his horse. Fremantle led his own horse that way. Longstreet had Gory with him, the aide from Texas. The greeting was friendly, even warm. Fremantle thought, startled. He likes me, and flushed with unexpected pride. He asked if he could ride with the general. Longstreet nodded. They rode down to the right, along the spine of the ridge, in under the trees. Most of Longstreet's staff had joined them.